Hi, welcome back to another episode of Real World Serverless, a podcast where I speak with real world practitioners and get their stories from the trenches. Today, I'm joined by Anton Babenko, who is a AWS community hero and a contributor to the server.tf project. Anton has been really helpful in terms of providing tooling for people that are using Terraform with their servers project. And I've been really interested in what the server.tf project is about for a while. So I thought, now's a good time to get Anton on the show, especially given the recent, the uproar around the Terraform announcement. So before we get into all that, Anton, do you want us just to say a few words about yourself and your experience with, AWS, Serverless, and Terraform?
Yeah, thank you very much, Jan, for inviting me. And it's a pleasure to share some of the things which I have been working with, specifically Terraform and AWS modules. So for the last many years, I've been working in this field, developing different modules, different projects. And then I just figured out that there is no good solution for people who want to have benefits of serverless on AWS, but they already have things written in Terraform. And that's exactly why I started serverless TF when COVID started. So that's timeline.
I guess from your sort of personal work experience, professional experience, have you done much with serverless yourself? And I'm guessing you must have, because why else would you create a serverless or TF, even not using serverless yourself?
I was using AWS for a few years before Lambda was released, before serverless was becoming a thing. But I always felt that this is a bit too much. So when Lambda was released in 2014, approximately 2016, when I discovered Terraform, I was like, oh yeah, there should be a good way to connect these two things. But then I was using serverless framework I don't remember years, but approximately for a couple of years. And I got an impression that it is a bit not what I wanted. So I had already a pretty big fragmentation between tools. So I was using serverless framework for making resources related to my application, packaging it. And then I was happily using Terraform for my infrastructure management. And then in addition to this one, I was also using a bunch of different Glue tools like Shell Script or AWS CLI to connect these things together somehow in a pipeline. And overall, it was way too complicated than I was initially expected. I was expecting that, hey, I will write my simple Lambda function. I will specify a couple IAM permissions to it, and that's it. But the reality hit is that I was suddenly required to become an expert in serverless framework, plugin systems, and Node.js, which I absolutely don't understand even after being in web development for nearly 20 years. Oh yeah, it's already 20 years. Yeah, I'm not that old, but I have been in this industry for more than 20 years. Dealing with this complexity was pretty natural for me that, okay, I need to research how can I connect these two things, Terraform and the serverless approach, where developers should be just writing code and we handle the rest using existing Terraform solutions. So by the time when serverless TF started, I'm talking about the community of Terraform AWS modules, we have already developed quite a lot of modules for the traditional type of resources, like VPC, auto-scaling groups, different relational database services, and so on. But we didn't have anything specific for serverless. So the first module which I have developed was for AWS Lambda, and then Step Function and AppSync, and many other purely serverless components. So that's how it all started. And even looking into what I'm adding now is that I'm adding new features into different services with the ultimate goal that developers who will be using this solution will have a significantly simpler life when they want to use the services. For example, if they want to use event bridge pipes, eventually, I mean, eventually, I'm talking in the near future, they will be required to just specify a couple arguments to it. And then the module will do the heavy lifting and figure out what kind of relations to create and what kind of policies and roles to attach and so on. Everything is in open source. So users just look into source code, look into examples, contribute back. That's pretty much the flow.
Right. I mean, I've seen that the split between the infrastructure teams using Terraform or preferring to use Terraform or dictating everyone to have to use Terraform in the past, whereas the application teams or feature teams prefer to use something like Server Framework, which is the application development framework, not just for infrastructure, creating resources in AWS, but also in terms of helping you with your development flow, being able to, say, invoke functions locally, allowing you to put a breakpoint in your code so that you can debug through it, or being able to use the plugin system to do, you know, help you with some of the sort of bundling and things like that. And I have seen that split where infrastructure teams don't care about some of those application development, you know, aspects, so they just stick with a Terraform. And now you have problems with, okay, you got one team that's creating the landing zones, creating the VPCs and things like that, and the other team that need to deploy their Lambda functions and whatnot into those resources and into reference them. So there's a lot of frictions around how do you share the information like VPC IDs and subnet, you know, IDs and various different things across different two, I guess, toolings. There are some ways around it, but obviously, you know, I think a lot of people would prefer to use one tool for everything. And with the server framework, when you want to create just raw, you know, AWS resources, you have to go back to CloudFormation, which can be very verbose for, you know, certain things. And I do think Terraform makes some of those things a lot easier. But in the past, when I've used the Terraform for the serverless project, you know, there's all kind of weird things you run into with the Terraform native, I guess, modules. Well, what do you call it? Resources or modules for like Lambda functions and things like that. Things, if I can remember, things like when depending on what change you make to your function, you may run into API throttling. And so we've had to daisy chain our functions so that, you know, function A depends on function B, even though it doesn't really, but we just do that so that we limit the number of concurrent updates that goes to the Lambda API from Terraform. Does your module help with that? Or is that like an inherent limitation on Terraform, given how it behaves and how the fact that it uses the AWS API under the hood as opposed to CloudFormation?
Frankly speaking, I'm not sure that I have ever hit such a limitation or such a constraint between or related to throttling, at least. Normally, Terraform is smart enough to understand if it is throttling, and it will retry on your behalf. So yes, it will take maybe 5 more seconds to deploy if you deploy something what is really interconnected, or AWS expecting some difficulties, for example. Then yes, you may have a little bit longer delay. But as a user of Terraform, you should not see this happening so often, especially for the last 2-3 years or even 4-5 years. What I find really important in this aspect is that Terraform is very smart in the way how it builds the whole graph of relation. And if we look into typical projects, we can think about it as being graph between hundreds or even thousands of different resources, like individual IAM policies, roles, and all of this interconnected is something what Terraform is good at handling. What I like to think about it is when we look into this typical infrastructure and bunch of different resources connected, the main thing which is introduced by the serverless approach is the application code itself, which is typically, let's say, a Python application with some dependencies. So what serverless TF is able to do is that it can bring this application code to the graph, which means that Terraform will be responsible to converge the whole graph and execute it in the right order. So if it will see that you change something inside of your requirements.txt file, it means that, okay, package will have to be rebuilt, then it will have to be uploaded to S3, then it will have to be mentioned inside of Lambda function source, then it will see that, okay, you also changed some IAM roles, you added some policies, and all of these dependencies are natively handled by Terraform, which is the beauty. So you don't need to remember that, oh, okay, I need to run my packaging script, which will do something. Maybe it will be idempotent, maybe not, but it will produce some artifact. Then you need to pass this artifact to your other tool, which can be your application deployment script, or you rely on infrastructure management tool like Terraform to deploy this zip archive somewhere. So you need to do quite a lot. With serverless TF approach, you just say, this is my infrastructure and this is my source pass for the Lambda, and it will natively connect. When it comes to the development lifecycle and development experience, this is a little bit trickier. And as you pointed out, the developers may want to have a possibility to run things, maybe locally, maybe in some isolation. There is quite a lot of good features in services like LocalStack. So LocalStack is the service which can be natively connected to Terraform, and it will really replace all of the serverless resources which you have somewhere out there, but it will replace it with your local copies, I mean your local emulators, so to speak, which means that you can still run debug script, but it will be making locally emulated copies of your AWS resources, and you can still go step by step, and you can test your Terraform code at the same time, so that your Terraform code is not changed. The only thing which will be changed is whether you talk to a real AWS account or your local AWS account, and you can still use debugs and hot load or hot reload features of local stack, which gives quite a lot of improvement to my mind. It's a little bit tricky to get it up and set up and teach your colleagues, but once it's done, then it works quite nicely. So development experience with Terraform and serverless TF is, I would say, it's pretty good, but maybe I'm biased.
I guess from what you've just described there, it sounds like through serverless TF, you're addressing some of the common problems people have in terms of using the raw or the native Terraform modules, where you are still responsible for doing the packaging and things like that. It sounds like with serverless.tf, you are taking care of a lot of that. So that, for example, like the requirement CXC thing for Python, so you don't have to deal with that anymore. That's all kind of done by the service TF modules. I've not used the Terraform as much as you do. So, I trust in what you said about the throttling issue, but that was something that I ran into a lot. And I do remember seeing a lot of GitHub issues on Terraform as well that pointing to the same problem. And then the one that I've seen before as well is, I think because of the way Lambda's API is organized, if you update the function with multiple things, sometimes you can get this resource conflict exception or something like that, where it try to make two API calls to update the same function because you need to call one to update, I don't know, configuration for memory or something, another one to update another setting. So it causes like a concurrency problem on the Lambda side. But I guess the Terraform, the main problem people had, at least I had, was the fact that you have to manage a lot of the dependencies and packaging all of that for you, which sounds like, you know, that's kind of taken care of by the serverless TF modules. And for people that are not using Terraform regularly, and or maybe they're not using custom modules, how do they get started with serverless TF? Is it a case of having to install some dependencies or libraries on their machine, or is it something that, they just, you know, include as part of the project?
Yeah, well, that's a little bit tricky question because I was still pretty busy with many other things, so I didn't quite figure out what is a getting started guide for this during the last 3 years. So normally, at least that's what I did yesterday with a friend of mine who was looking into getting started with this Lambda module. And I'm typically advising people to look into the source code of Terraform AWS module you are interested, whether it is Lambda module or API gateway or any other one. And always there is an examples folder. Like in case of Lambda module, there are more than 15 different examples with all different features for like infinite amount of building a package, for example, or building a Docker image, installing many different types of dependencies for different runtimes. All of this is shown as a really working code. So what you can do is that you go to examples folder, you find an example which you think is the most relevant. Usually example called complete is really complete, is not something what you're going to use right away because it just showcases all features into one. It's very, very easy to get lost there, but it's kind of impressive that you can have so much in one module. But then you go to this folder, you understand what kind of parameters you need to specify. You can always run this example and see things created. And then you will have a way to create, let's say, one resource, one Lambda function, for example. If you like to see how this is implemented in more real setups, then if you go to serverless.tf website, and then if you search for a specific module, on serverless.tf, there is a big button at the top, which says read more on GitHub. You can read everything there, and there is actually getting started guide at the very top, which is having a lot of links. You can go from there and understand how things can be implemented. Again, normally you start with finding one module, using it, and then you understand the pattern, how this can be integrated with the rest. And yeah, that's pretty much it. There is CLI. There is no extra things which you need to do. And that's really important to understand, because a lot of people think that if it is a serverless TF framework, then people, or some people at least, assume that there is some sort of CLI. While it is true for some cases, what I believe is that serverless TF is just an opinionated way of implementing it. It's not giving you a tool. It's not like another tool you need to install and then it will have something for you. You already have Terraform installed. That's it. You don't need anything else.
Okay, so I guess that from that description, it sounds like serverless.tf is less a framework, but as a kind of like extension to the existing Terraform module, so that you can configure your functions easier with Terraform. Would that be correct to say that?
Yeah, that's a pretty precise statement. While Word framework itself, from what I got from Wikipedia, it says it's a generic term commonly referring to to support something.
Right.
So that's it. That's how I got into this work framework. I know that
Right.
it's a bit confusing, so I probably need to find something else as a name, but that's it.
Okay, so when it comes to Terraform and the Terraform modules, so there's no additional installation process. You can just use and reference the Lambda function module, for example, that you've got from server.tf. There's no, you can just start using it straight away.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
There are some repositories which I place into server.tf playground where I have several pretty much real life architectures with API gateway, a couple of Lambda functions, DynamoDB, and ACM certificates and router 3. So all of this is connected. So you can go to github.com/AntonBabienko and then serverless.tf hyphen playground. So serverless.tf playground is name where I put a bunch of different things in real setup.
Yeah, I had a look at that just before we jump on the call as well, and the link will be in the description below. So for that one, there's a command I can see that you can. Okay, that's for right. So with that, I can then look into the source code folder, and I guess I can see the structure for your functions in Terraform, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, API gateway. Yeah, so all of these are using source, okay, Lambda.
So if you're
Terraform
looking...
AWS module slash Lambda slash AWS, okay.
Yeah, for people who are familiar with Terraform, you don't have to be really expert in Terraform, like know internals of whatever is happening under the hood. But as a user, what I really like people doing is just understanding basic patterns of integrating. Like you have invocation of an API gateway module, which expect certain inputs. And you just specify name, domain name, certificate, integrations, and the module will handle it for you and will figure out the ordering of creation, correct permissions, and so on. And
right.
Same for Lambda.
Okay. And all of these modules are part of the Terraform AWS modules. I'm getting a bit confused now with server.tf and how it fits into Terraform AWS modules. Is that part of the same thing, or is it something separate?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is totally the same thing. The only thing which serverless.tf brings is extra guidance about how
right,
to use
okay.
If you want to build serverless, because this is a bit different. They have a little bit different life cycle. They have some dependencies to your source code. For example, none of other modules which we have for Terraform AWS modules depends on your application code, for example. They're
right.
only about infrastructure, while serverless has extra dependencies. They have extra requirements for different things. And this is exactly what is documented in serverless.tf.
Okay, gotcha. And so talking about Terraform, obviously the big news recently is the announcement that they've changed the licensing structure for using Terraform, and there's been a lot of uproar from the community. And then I think the open Terraform movement has just got a lot of traction recently. So for folks who haven't been keeping tab on what's been going on, can you tell us what's been happening? Why is everyone so upset about the licensing change?
Well, actually people who didn't hear about this. Well,
maybe not everyone uses a Terraform.
Yeah, but I think it was everywhere, really. Even people who should not know about it have heard this news. Well, and that's actually, to my mind, a bit of marketing, overall involved. So first of all, HashiCorp changed the license for Terraform from being Mozilla license to business usage license or something like that. So that's important. Then the second thing, who is affected? And this is really important. 99.9% of real users are not affected. So why are we even talking about this? I mean, most of us are not affected in any way whatsoever. The only people who are affected are companies who were building a commercial offering based on open source Terraform. So pretty much they were competing with the product by HashiCorp, which is Terraform Cloud. So of course, HashiCorp decided to just shrink them and tell them, please get ready to pay, or we will take license. I mean, we'll change license so you cannot operate your business. And that's why it was represented as like, in some places, it was pretty much like, oh, it's end of open source, life is going to be miserable from now on. Well, not for everyone. I can clearly say that. And I don't think most of us should be worried about it. Of course, it's good to have like foundation and have Terraform managed as a part of foundation. That's great. But there are so many technical questions related to the future of this project, which is now called not OpenTF, but OpenTofu and Terraform. For example, compatibility issues between these two projects. Or if let's say I'm writing Terraform module, should and they introduce different features in different tools, should I write this twice, support two different sets of features, and so on. There are infinite amounts of questions which I can raise in this regard. And as I said, I'm among 99.9% of people who were not affected, and all I just want is continue working as nothing has happened, and that's pretty much what I was doing since August 10. I'm developing new stuff, and I don't have time for this fights, because they are not affecting me in any way. If they will be affecting me or my customers or my work, then of course I will take a side and clearly protect it. But for the time being, it's war between HashiCorp and competitors of Terraform Cloud. That's it. And all 800 people and companies who pledged and say that they will support OpenTofu, that's good for them. I mean, for most of these people, it doesn't cost anything. They can say like, oh, I support this, but in fact, you don't have to do anything. So we will see how things change in approximately half year. I'm looking forward to be in San Francisco next week and talk to the community, but I'm pretty sure that all of us should just continue to move on and develop or continue using Terraform the way we've been using it. I really want that people try to think a little bit critically. Who is the initiator of this OpenTofu initiative? Well, and you will see that initiators of the initiative are companies who were affected by this change, not the end users who said like, oh, by the way, we don't like Terraform. That's why we're going to make our own. The statement was like, oh, they changed our license, so we cannot make our business. So we will fork it. And from now on, you guys will have to pay us money instead of HashiCorp. Pretty much like this. Again, I'm not big expert and big believer in OpenTofu as a necessary step for the users, but it's definitely a necessary step for companies who were affected by the change. And yeah, I wish them good luck. For the time being, I'm not going to take their side, because I, as I said, I'm not affected in any way. And all of my modules will be published in Terraform registry. And if it will be effortless for me to publish it in OpenTofu registry, then of course I will publish. But again, I don't think I will ever support two feature set for no reason.
Okay, that's really interesting. I hadn't realized that the license change only impacts companies that are building on open source version of Terraform and monetizing on their product versus the people that are just, like myself, building an app using Terraform. It doesn't affect me at all. That's interesting. And I guess that's where I think I saw quite a few of the fairly well-known people in the community because they are building products. And I guess maybe that's why there's so much, emotions behind this is because, a lot of these people are fairly well followed on social media. So there's a lot of momentum maybe just coming from that. And like I said, there's a lot of companies. I'm looking at this 147 companies now has officially said they support listed as the supporters for OpenTofu. So again, haven't realized that there are so many companies that are building commercial products and offerings on top of Terraform. And if I'm honest, if you are commercializing a product on top of open source, you probably on someone else's work, you probably should be paying something and contributing back to where it was coming from. So I kind of agree with you on that. And also as a end user, it kind of works against me to have two potential splits of Terraform in the future. There's more things that I have to decide, even though there's no cost to me to use Terraform directly or to use OpenTofu. So yeah, I guess I'll also keep an eye on that. We had a similar thing in the JavaScript space with the new bun runtime. There's no so commercial licensing involved, but the fact that there's a new runtime that offers slightly different characteristics and potentially in the future, there's still a lot of differences in terms of compatibility. And in the future, if they decide to do something different, then that again creates problems for just people that are building apps having to decide what runtime do I need to support and what runtime do I need to use. So interesting times.
No, I'm just saying that I didn't know about this similar situation in JavaScript runtime, like you mentioned. But again, I can clearly see that a lot of information which people hear or not hear, which people think is based on lack of information. It's like, oh, somebody told that it's going to be open source. Of course, let's publish it on Hacker News. And then people will say like, oh, it's not going to be open source and let's move to competitor. I've been to this position myself when I accidentally changed license on some of Terraform AWS modules without knowing that I actually changed license. And then somebody discovered and made a post on Hacker News. And I was not aware of this post. And pretty much in 1 hour, it got a lot of comments and a lot of false information there. So luckily, I was able to jump in into that Hacker News thread and tell clearly to people that this is not what you understand. This is the explanation. And I kind of explain it. But I can clearly see that if you are really vocal and if you say it in enough places, there is enough people who will misunderstand you quite quickly. This happens all over on social media, on Hacker News, on Reddit. If you just go there and say like, I don't know, Terraform will be disappeared tomorrow, for example, or I have heard that Terraform is going to be deleted tomorrow. It's enough to say on Hacker News and Reddit, and people will be like, oh my God, what should we do? So yeah, going to the source and reading initial statement is very important, but unfortunately it's more time consuming for many people. That's why they prefer to just amplify fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Right. Yeah. I try to stay away from Hacker News. It's just too much craziness and negative. I guess no ne negativity whenever I go to Hacker News and reading stuff there. I totally get it. Yeah, hyperbole is it's just easier to read a headline and just react to and feel emotional about it than to actually read and understand what's actually going on. Think critically about what's actually being said and what does it mean rather than just speculate. But that's not easy. That takes a discipline. Thanks for helping me understand the situation there. Is there anything that because you mentioned you're going to California, I guess are you going to reInvent this year? Are you doing any sessions over there?
Well, I'm going to be at reInvent, I actually have session there. I think I will talk about serverless TF. I'm not sure where exactly it will happen, like on which place. It's not going to be like breakout session, but it will be in the expo hall somewhere in the Venetian. And I will also present one another project which I'm currently working with a friend of mine. It's about Terraform and compliance and policy validation and along those lines. It depends how much we'll finish by that time, but if you are into compliance frameworks like SOC 2 or CIS framework, and you want your code to be your Terraform code to be compliant right away with less effort, stay tuned and follow me on different social media. I will announce it in the near future because it's already a, like working alpha prototype, which means it's going to be okay by the time when reInvent starts.
Okay, so we are recording on September 28th, but this episode probably going to go live around November. So hopefully by then, the new exciting tool that Anton's talking about is already available. So check the description below. I'll put a link there if Anton is able to give that information to me once it becomes available. Anton, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today and educating me on the serverless TF and Terraform in general.
Thank you very much, Jan, for having me. It's my pleasure to be with you, who are pretty much the first person I have ever met who told me that serverless is the thing. I remember that it was. I didn't know anything about serverless, and when I met you many years ago, you already looked like serverless was such a beaten horse for you, so you know everything in and out, and then I was really. Kind of assured when I talk to customers who also work with you, they say like, "Oh yeah, we know Jan. Jan is expert, and he help us with this and this." And I was like, "Oh yeah, so
Yeah, I
that's how."
remember we had a few common customers. Just the guys in the Indebted, I think they were one of them. They were really big fans of Terraform, and I think they did some work with you, right?
They were from Australia.
Oh yeah, I remember that. But yeah, it was just really great to know that you were working with them as well. Everyone who doesn't know, Anton is a consultant, as well as myself. So if you want to get some help from Anton about Terraform on how to follow compliance with a Terraform code, then I will put the Anton's contact details down below in the description as well. Thank you again, Anton. And unfortunately, I'm not going to make it to reInvent this year, but hopefully I'll catch you around some other time.
Well, pleasure to meet you. Thanks again for having me.
No worries. Take it easy and goodbye, everyone. So that's it for another episode of Real World Serverless. To access the show notes, please go to realworldserverless.com. If you want to learn how to build production-ready serverless applications, please check out my upcoming courses at productionreadyserverless.com. And I'll see you guys next time.